Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio and Toyland Productions present Survive TV Show, the source for inspiration and information. And as always, I'm your host, Mr. Survive TV, coming at you from the most powerful city in the world, Washington, D.C., where all the lies, liars, and secrets are held. So what we're going to do today, we're going to expose some of the liars, tell you where the lies are, and expose some of the secrets, so that way we can have a better community. And once again, I want to thank everyone for taking out a little bit of time to join the Rise TV show and making this a part of your Sunday evening. I want to let people know a little bit about tonight's show. Tonight's show will go into overtime. So if you do lose a part of the show, don't worry about it. It will be on podcast later on tonight, and it can be podcast at any time on Blog Talk Radio. This topic here is such a large topic that it's very difficult to put into a 30-minute show. So I will go into a little bit of overtime, but I promise you, those who are listening live right now will get the full gamut of a lot of things that we're going to talk about, and I hope to hear from a lot of people today. You can call in 347-850-1228. Once again, 347-850-1228, or you can log on to Facebook. We can have a conversation on there as well. I would like to hear a lot of people's impact and information on today's show. A couple things before we get started with the show. Of course, as always, we're sponsored by Tranquil Minds Massage and Wellness. It is springtime. People are being more active. And just want to let people know that massage is not just for relaxation. It is also therapeutic treatment. So if you're doing sports, if you're having arthritis, especially with the changing of the weather from the cold weather to the warm weather, a lot of back issues going on now, look for a massage. If you're in the D.C. metro area, you can contact me at RSD44 on Twitter. You can hit me up on Facebook at Rodney Stevenson, and you can also go on to tqmind.massagetherapy.com. Once again, tqmind.massagetherapy.com for all your massage needs. And also, I wanted to give a big shout-out to the Jack and Jill organization, the Baltimore chapter, yesterday for inviting us out to their event. It was a really great event, fun fellowship, and I really appreciate them for taking the time out. So inviting Tranquil Minds out there, and it was really a great time. So I just wanted to give a big shout out to them. And this topic tonight, on the focus at hand, is America in 100 yards. And what we're talking about tonight is the parallel between our nation and our national pastime. Now, most people say, "Well, baseball isn't baseball considered our national pastime?" Ball was. But when you look at the dynamics of the four major sports in the United States, you'll see why football is considered a national pastime. What people like to associate when it comes down to sports and entertainment is a sport or entertainment object that reflects their everyday lives, reflects their community. Each and every Sunday, we sit down in front of our TVs and we spend about 4 to sometimes 8 hours of our day entranced and involved with our National Football League, with our new national pastime. And this is a way that we kind of deflect what's going on in our lives and also to create a diversion for our everyday lives going into the rest of our week. So what I would like to do first is look into the level of the four sports and see why the National Football League is considered a national pastime. This is from order from the first when it comes down to the way America sees these sports. Hockey is ranked number 4 in our country, and hockey will never be the national pastime because it's not our national sport. It was created in another country and dominated in players and management by those from mostly Canada and Western Europe. So that's why hockey is not considered a national pastime, even though a lot of Americans do enjoy hockey. It will never be our national pastime. Number 3, you know, which considered America's sport, which when in my parents' day and my grandparents' day, people would say it's American as baseball and apple pie. But baseball now is the number three sport when it comes down to national pastime. And that comes because, with, like I said, we look for things that reflect America and American culture, and baseball no longer does that. I don't know if any time in our history that it really truly reflected American culture, because even the time when that phrase came about, the Norman Rockwell era, when it said America is baseball and apple pie, at that time, majority of baseball players were Caucasian. And as far as African-American players, we were disenfranchised and not even able to play in the same league as Caucasian players for a long period of time. Even when we were, it took forever. It took to the mid-70s before Frank Robinson became the first African-American manager. So you got the lower-level the lower level employee, which are the players, the mid-level employee, which is the head coach or management level, and come to baseball, but it's not reflective of a large portion of the American population. Now you look at baseball, and baseball is dominated by Central and South American players, Central and South American members of management, and a lot of players also coming from Asia. So that's why baseball has fallen from the number one national pastime down to number three. So that leaves the two big sports, the National Basketball Association and the National Football League. And the reason why the NBA will never be the national pastime, because once again, according to the media, it does not properly reflect the overall balance of our country. And if you look at it, in essence, it really doesn't, and it's sad to say that it doesn't, because starting from the upper-level management, the owners, the presidents of the companies and the corporations that make up the NBA, majority of them are between 30 and 45 dot-com billionaires, or are those who have invested their money very wisely. They're successful entertainers, rappers, actors, musicians, and former athletes that invested their money wisely into these organizations. You look at the upper level employee, which is the general manager. Majority of the general managers in the NBA are of color. You look at the lower level management level, which is the head coach or the assistant coaches. Majority of them are younger and also of color. And then you look at the basic employee, which are the NBA basketball players, predominantly run by people of color and also people from other countries such as Asia, Germany, Spain, Brazil, Portugal. It's a very big melting pot of people that are in the NBA. And the NBA, they control their franchising, they control their marketing, they control the way that they are represented from the player standpoint, from the owner standpoint. And obviously we know that's not reflective of the American culture. So they have the National Football League. And there's so many different levels that the National Football League represents America, from a political, from a social, from an economic, from all different points, all different standpoints. The National Football League is very reflective of the American culture. And I know we were going to talk about this last week, and it's kind of ironic that I was not able to talk about this last week, because we had some really breaking news in regards to one of the big players in the NFL, Rashad Mendenhall, this afternoon announced his retirement in a very long essay that he typed on the Huffington Post. It goes on over 1,500 words. It's a very long article, but it's a very poignant article because he really wanted to stress the fact of why he was retiring. And he's only 26 years old, right in the prime of his career as a running back, and on a very prominent and dominant team as the Pittsburgh Steelers. But he decided to retire because, in paraphrasing what he said in the Huffington Post, if you haven't read it, get a chance to read this article. It's very interesting in how he reflects on the National Football League. But overall, he said that NFL does not really take care of their employees. And the politics and the entertainment value that they put towards the NFL is putting risk various players and increasing injury, and they do this without a care. He said that NFL has become more of a reality show than a sport. And since it has become a reality show, he decided to retire at 26 years old. And when you think about that, a reality show, what better form of medium that defines our American culture right now than the modern-day reality show? And if this is a football player in the prime of his career that is going to retire because he feels that the NFL has become a reality show, then that really just tells you a lot about what the NFL stands for now. And it brings up a lot of different points. Just like this country, the NFL was founded on a definition of violence. A definition of violence: who can hit the hardest, who can dominate the field, dominate the turf, and move, push back anybody that opposes them. That sounds like America right there. America was founded on that sense of violence, pushing back any opponent, whether it's the British Army, whether it's the native tribes that are keeping them from moving to the West, whether it was the Mexican and Spanish armadas that came in to try to defend the land that they've lived on for hundreds of years, that, you know, what we call now Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, whether it's African Americans that were trying to fight back in order to win their freedom. You know, that's America, and that's what the NFL has always been about, on that aspect. So going into political aspects of the National Football League, which was brought up by Rashad Mendenhall this afternoon, which I thought was very poignant to what I want to display. Politics are a very big factor of the National Football League. It all depends on what the commissioner decides on when it comes down to the policies and procedures. They claim that there's a consensus that the owners get together in order to make decisions, but it ultimately comes down to a select few that dominate the meetings. You know, the Cowboys owner, the Raiders owner, the Redskins owner pretty much dominate the meeting. Our political structure is the same way. They say it's being represented by the people, being represented by Congress, but really there's only a small handful of senators and congressmen that actually make the decisions that dominate this whole country. NFL is a great reflection of that. You look at the structure of even how the players are coming into the league. That it goes into political and economical structure. You figure you have a bunch of players that are low-level employees, as I call them, to reflect on this nation. The low-level employees are interns for a long period of time, typically between 2 and 4 years of their teenage lives and their early adult lives, and they're working as interns in order to risk their lives for a job, to sacrifice their job and risk their livelihood in order to make these intern companies hundreds of millions and mostly billions of dollars. That sounds like the American way to me. And this is what I'm talking about in the college game. The college game is basically an internship. Internship for the National Football League, where the colleges and universities are making hundreds of millions of dollars off of people who do not get a dime. Of course, they say they may get an education, but really it's a floating education because now they've restructured the college structure so much that it's all about the money to generate before they go pro. And these players got nothing to show for it, a very limited education, very high risk of injury, high risk of not even able to make it to the league because of the structure of the league of college itself. Then, once they finish this internship, they are charted off to Indianapolis, Indiana, birthplace of the Ku Klux Klan, charted off to what's called a combine. And the combine is, in essence, a place where these quote-unquote scouts go to in order to pick, prod, and poke these interns in order to see which one will be the best fit, which one is the strongest, which one is the fastest, which one can jump the highest, which one can do the most work on the field. And the first day that these interns, that these players go to the combine in Indianapolis, Indiana, they're stripped down to basically their underwear, and these scouts measure them from everything from their size of their hand to the size of their neck to the diameter of their head to how high they can jump to how fast they can run. And then they're given a test to see their intelligence, which really doesn't really matter. They just want to do that just to make it seem like they care about their intelligence, but they're looking for that quote-unquote workhorse. They're looking for that quote-unquote stud. When you listen to these words, workhorse, stud, you know, doesn't that take you back to a time in the 1800s where, or 1700s or 1600s when people were taken away from their native land and taken across the Atlantic Ocean in order to be brought here to America in order to workhorse that they can put out into the field? That sounds like the American way to me. That's why the NFL is a national pastime, because it is a general reflex reflection of American culture. This is right before they even start. They're put in here in this combine to show off their skills in order to hope that they can please these scouts. And who are these scouts? These scouts don't have a true representation of American culture. A lot of these scouts are a reflection like America. A lot of the major businesses in America are run by older Caucasian men, which have a lot of money and a lot of clout, and they get their jobs because of who they know, who their family members are, or what they have done for this quote-unquote commissioner, the chief. Sounds like America, sounds like our American economic structure right there. The top management are those who inherited the business, are those who knew somebody and got on top that way, who stepped on people or abused people to get on top, and most of these people are older Caucasian men. Level structure of the National Football League, and this is what people don't realize when they sit down here every Sunday and look at this. The political economic structure of the National Football League reflects the American structure. That's why this is our reality show, as Rashad Mendenhall said. That's why this is our national pastime. Upper level management, older white people, you know, older white men that inherited this business. You know, we just had a passing of one of the Fords that owned the Detroit Lions. The Ford family has owned that franchise since its initial beginning back in the 1930s. So that shows that, you know, that's how the structure is built. It's not built on who can purchase a team, who has any opportunity to purchase a team. Unfortunately, it's about how it's passed down and who you know. You look at the upper-level management, the general managers of the National Football League. Also, once again, older Caucasian men who may have known somebody, and that have gotten them that position. Or it might be the son of one of the owners. That's how the upper-level management of the National Football League is structured. The lower-level management, the head coaches, basically, they are the old establishment. You have the older Caucasian men that get into these head coaching positions, and they get in these positions because of their standing or their status for a long period of time. If they do allow a person of color, like a Tony Dungy or a Ron Rivera, to get in there, there's one of two ways they got in there. Not really based on their merit, even though it should have been. One aspect is because of the Rooney Rule, affirmative action. Affirmative action allowed the team to pick an African-American player not because they may have wanted to interview them initially, because they had to interview them. And then based on their interview, the team may say, you know what, this person actually has a good amount of skill in order to be our head coach. So let's make him a head coach. Not really based on their merit, but based on the Rooney Rule that's called affirmative action. And unfortunately, our American society is still that same way, where you have CEOs of corporations, or you have upper-level management, general managers of these corporations that weren't really the first, second, third, or fourth choice. However, because of affirmative action, they were offered an interview. And this is not the way that management should be brought into any business, especially into those who have, especially the corporations or companies where the people do have merit in order to be successful in their job. But, however, the NFL, just like America, has this structure when it comes down to choosing their coaches. And then you have the lower management, all the assistant coaches, which are predominantly people of color, basically former athletes that work their way into that position and do a lot of the grunt work, so that way they make the older Caucasian male in the upper management look good. Sounds like America to me. You know, I have a lot of the lower-level management, the assistant managers, the floor managers, the factory managers, factory heads that put in all the work, put in all the hours, doing all the things to make the company run successfully, but do not get the pay or recognition that the older Caucasian male who really doesn't do much, you know, gets credit for and get the money for. Then you have the players. The players, the lower level, the ones that went through the combine, that went through that the prodding and poking in order to be an NFL player. The dynamics of how these players are established and where they're set up are based on color lines, just like it is in American structure. The quarterbacks, if there are quarterbacks of color, they're always over-scrutinized compared to the Caucasian quarterback, which might not have the same amount of skill. Then you have the position players, the glamour players, like the running back or the wide receiver, which basically is all about the flash and dash. It is based, it's not driven by intelligence, not driven by education, not driven by the building of a dream. It's driven by politics and economics. Wherever the money goes and whoever has political power runs this show. And that was reflective of what happened in Arizona recently, where because the Arizona state government decided that they that there was a bill to a religious freedom bill to have people that run restaurants, that run hotels, to refuse service for those who they assumed was homosexual. And if the governor signed that particular bill, the NFL was going to pull the Super Bowl from the state of Arizona. And the main reason why Governor Brewer of Arizona vetoed that bill was because she was afraid of the economic and political impact it would have, because the NFL was going to move their Super Bowl from Arizona to another state, to Northern California, to San Francisco, the Bay Area, out of all places. So that shows the power of the NFL and how it affects our American society. You know, you can't even, you know, laws can't even be passed a lot of times without the NFL's approval, because it just has that much power. Social impact of the NFL stretches not only just with, you know, with homosexuality, but also with racial injustices. You look at the Washington Redskins. The Redskins' name has been a longstanding name for over 80 years. And this has been fought off and on for the past 40, 50 years where people were trying to fight the Redskins' name. However, the political standing and political structure of the National Football League has implanted in our minds as American people that the Redskins name isn't really that racist. You know, it's really not that racist when you look at it. That's the way a lot of fans have viewed the name Redskins, even though there are native tribes in Florida, throughout the Mid-Atlantic, that are trying to fight this name. They've been fighting it for years, but because of the political and economic structure of the National Football League, they have skewed the social conscience of the American people to believe that the Redskins' name is not that, going on for a different amount of levels when it comes down to how socially the National Football League has ingrained in our minds. We look at the Caucasian quarterback as the intelligent quarterback, while we look at the African-American quarterback as a very athletic quarterback, a very agile quarterback, you know, someone who really brings a lot of flash and style. But the intelligence is lost in those particular quarterbacks. You look at the head coaches. The head coaches are put on such a high pedestal, except for when there's a coach of color, because of the fact that if a Bill Parcells went 7-9 in a season, he would keep his job. He'll get an extension in his contract. If, say, Raheem Morris goes 7-9 after going 13-3 the year before, he gets fired and has to take a lower-level job and may not even get another head coaching opportunity. Look at people like such as Dennis Green, Tony Dungy, Lovie Smith. You know, they had to fight really hard to get to the level that they were, but any time they had one bad season, there was a big risk that they were going. Even if they didn't have a bad season, they would be going. the American structure is the same way. If a person that is not a part of the establishment tried to develop a company and it may be moderately successful but not completely successful, then they're going to lose their business. You have to be 5 times better than the establishment in order to maintain your job. That's how American economic structure is, and that's how the National Football League is. And this is what we're talking about today, Blog Talk Radio, the Rise TV show, America in 100 Yards. And I just want to let people know there's only a couple minutes left at the live show. We're going to go into overtime very soon. So if you do miss a portion of the show, I will pause briefly before we go into overtime. And I do encourage everybody to listen to the podcast afterwards. And you're still able to call in 347-850-1228, 347-850-1228. If we do go into overtime, I'll still be able to take calls and we still be able to have a discussion on this particular topic. So I just want to get that in there. Just don't be surprised if the show goes off and we still have an edition on the podcast. And just want to thank everybody once again for listening to the Rise TV show, Blog Talk Radio, Toyland Entertainment. It's been having some really big shows recently, and I just want to let you know that this is that in the springtime we're getting to a lot of different political topics. This is a midterm election year. A lot of major elections are coming up, so we're going to be going to get into politics a lot. We're going to get into a lot of the different cases that are going on, social injustice, racial injustice, and talk about some of the main current event things that are going on around the world as well. So I just want to get that out there. And definitely appreciate everybody that's been listening to Love Talk as well on Friday nights. Doug Love and I, we've been really doing some really big things and really trying to bring a lot of things to uplift the community, not only on political and social side, but also in relationships and love side as well. So I want to thank everybody for that. Now, we have a few seconds left in the live show. If you do hear a brief pause, we're going right into overtime. So for those who are continuing to listen to overtime, look forward to talking with you. For those who are only listening to the live show, until next time, we will talk next week. I encourage everybody to hang on and go or listen to the podcast, and we're going to continue this topic. And this is Overtime on the Rise TV Show, Blog Talk Radio, blogtalk.com, Toyland Entertainment. And we are talking about America in 100 Yards. And we are going to get into more of the social aspect of the NFL and how it reflects on American society. One big topic that a lot of people have been looking into and have been discussing is the person Michael Sam. Michael Sam, player for Missouri. He has come out openly gay, and it looks like he will be the first openly gay National Football League player. And this here is a very interesting topic because of the fact that the National Football League has been very big on trying to change the scope of how they view the NFL and homosexuality. And the upside about this, that they're trying to be inclusive. They're trying to make sure that no matter who you are, no matter what your lifestyle is, you're going to be accepted into the National Football League. The downside about it is that isn't proving themselves to be a top-quality NFL player, he shouldn't be considered a first-round NFL player. And that's something that the society and the National Football League is trying to come to grips to right now. Those who don't know, Michael Sam went to the combine and had a very poor performance. However, he's still looking to be considered a first-round draft pick. This is very reflective of what's going on with American society right now, where a lot of times there's battles going on between gay rights advocates and American society, where people, some people feel that the gay rights advocates are bullying American society to accept them in ways that aren't reflective of, or not really in a way that should be even considered as a proper way to be accepted. Some people for religious reasons, some people say for social reasons. However, the American society is being is hitting a new civil rights, in essence, civil rights battle when it comes down to sexual orientation. And NFL is right in the forefront, right in the head of that right now, and very reflective of what's going on in American society. So you look at that aspect of how it correlates. And then you have the case of Richie Incognito and his teammate going back and forth with banter, using profusely the N-word. And this here is something that that a lot of us in the African American community is battling, a lot of us in social and societal and generational communities are battling. Because is it okay, is it ever okay for a white person to use the word nigger to an African American person? And there was a big fight that Martin from the Dolphins went to the NFL saying that he was being bullied, and he left the National Football League because he said that Richie Incognito used this word constantly against him. But when you reviewed it, they used this term back and forth via email, via text, and it wasn't a problem until things went a little too far. And then you talk to people in the locker room, and the people in the locker room said that oh, yeah, use it all the time. He's considered one of us. One of us? Really? That's how our society looks at this term now. Society looks at the word nigger like it's not a big deal. And now the National Football League, because of the embarrassment that they had due to this case, it is now trying to penalize people who use that word on the football field. And is this a reflection of American society? Yes, it is. It's more of a reactive thing. You know, we don't mind people using it unless it really embarrasses us as a company, as a country. And that's what we see on Twitter, on Facebook, on social networks, on the political shows when it comes down to people talking about our president. They use different terms, you know, for a president, they'll use a term called aloof or nuanced or things like that to try to get around what they really want to say about the president. The double standards that we see when it comes down to our National Football League players. Richie Incognito is considered a bully. He's considered just just kind of a guy that runs his mouth too much. But Richard Sherman, when he's overly excited about a win, overly excited about going to the Super Bowl, he's considered a thug, even though he doesn't reflect anything that would be considered a thug. But a lot of Caucasian Americans that watch the National Football League look at certain players and say, oh, this thug mentality that they have, they're bringing down the National Football League. You know, they shouldn't be hitting so hard and bringing this thug style to the game. Thug style to the game. This is what we see when people discuss young African American men. We saw that case in Florida, Michael Dunn, talking about these thugs around us. Feel like he was vindicated for what his actions that he did. That's when a lot of people's mentality of young African American men are brought upon because of what they see and what they hear on Sunday afternoon football. People might not want to admit that, but there's a big impact of what these commentators and what these reporters say about young African American men and how it reflects on the image of young African American men to those who are watching each and every Sunday, or going on SportsCenter and watching each and every day. You look at these crimes that happen. You know, you look at these crimes, Aaron Hernandez, Ray Rice, and all these various players that are facing criminal charges, and the perception that those who sit back and watch football each and every Sunday, or go on the sports talk radio shows, or look on ESPN, that's what they see. They see these crimes and they say, oh, that must be how all black men are. All black men must be killers or wife beaters or they're drug users, and this is what they see. the reflection, that's way entertainment and the reality show of the National Football League has structured people's minds. And American culture has become that. You know, from every show from Scandal to Basketball Wives, it reflects on our African-American women like that. And the NFL is our reflection of African-American men, according to society. And for those who are listening right now, we are in overtime. This is Blog Talk Radio, blogtalk.com, The Rod Stevie Show. We're really doing some big things. We'll come down to America in 100 Yards, breaking down America's pastime and American society, and just touching on a lot of the criminal aspects of what you see. You only see, when it comes down to criminal side of the National Football League, young African-American men. We never see when Caucasian men get caught out for performance-enhancing drugs. We never see when they're busted for DUI or DWI. The rampant amount of spousal abuse that happens in the National Football League predominantly happens from the Caucasian players, but you don't see that on ESPN. That doesn't – an offensive lineman abuses their wife. That's not as exciting as, say, a star running back for a Super Bowl championship team abusing their wife. That's the way media runs things. You know, that's what we see reflected from the National Football League to American society. And what can we do to change the image of the NFL, to change the image that people see of us? That's the big challenge, because there's so many people that adore the National Football League that they don't want any changes to their league. They don't want any changes to the way it's played. They don't want any changes to the way it's broadcasted. And that's the way America is now. We are rejected of change because we're afraid of what change will bring. And until we accept change, until we accept the way we perception of each other, then the NFL and also American society is going to be the same. And finally, I want to talk about the religious aspect of the National Football League and American society. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of us are victims of this. On a Sunday afternoon, you know, we might be in church, but our minds might not be on church. Our minds might be focused on going back home and watching football. Football, some people feel that football is their religion. Some people have turned away from going to church, turned away from because of football. Sunday has become a day of, you know, I just wouldn't want to do anything but sit back and watch the NFL Network. That's the power of the NFL, and that's how the NFL has changed American society. You know, you see players at the end of games praying with each other, shaking hands and praying with each other at the end of the game, and you should see the vitriol and see the venom that people say on these blogs, on these news talk shows, these sports talk shows, when it comes down to praying after the game. Fans don't want to see praying after the game. They want to see people smashing each other's heads, and they want to see the violence. And they feel that prayer at the end of football games takes away from the competitive edge that the NFL players need to have. Just, isn't that insane when you think about it? A country that was founded, allegedly, on religious freedom. In their national pastime, they don't want religious freedom. And the NFL has taken away people's religious freedoms because they want to worship the National Football League and not worship the supreme being of their choice. This is the power of the NFL, and this is how the NFL has changed the structure of American society. You have players such as Tim Tebow, who was very open about their religious beliefs, and he was ridiculed for it, saying that it made him too soft, that it made him incapable of being a quality football player. Now he doesn't even have a job. You have players that try to be cordial with each other, that try to say, I'm going to pray for you, I want to be, you know, ministers on the team. And that's a contradiction to a lot of fans, to a lot of coaches, to a lot of general managers when it comes down to choosing these players, because they feel that their religion will take away the edge. If anything, religion is what a lot of people need when they get on the football field, to make sure that they're being guided, that they're being blessed in order to be successful on the field. I mean, teams can get 15-yard penalties if two people get on their knees and pray after a touchdown is scored. The contradiction of the National Football League is very reflective of the contradiction of American society. Football, you get fined for having the wrong socks. You get fined, you get penalized for praying collectively on the field of play. But they want to say that they're open and free, and that this is a very democratic league. Same thing with America. You can't pray in school. You know, you can't pray in certain venues, but this is supposed to be a democratic society. And if you do pray, you better pray for the right God. You better not pray for the wrong God, because if you do, then you might be considered a terrorist or a person of interest that they might want to take in. You know, if a Muslim person prays on a plane, a lot of people might think that he's a terrorist. There's not too many players that promote their Islamic faith on the National Football League because of the fact that they're afraid that they might be branded or chastised. There's quite a few players that are Muslim on the National Football League that hide their religion because of the fact that they might be chastised, or they might be blackballed when it comes down to free agency and choosing a different team. You know, we have games on Sunday. We have games on Monday, Thursday, Saturday. The NFL is taking over our time frame where we're with our families, with our loved ones, with our friends, because we focus so much on football. And American society has become that as well. American society has become a place where we divert our attention to our family with other means of entertainment, so that way we don't have to have that strong family structure. And this is how things have changed and transpired because of the National Football League. Once again, this is the Rise TV Show, Soil Entertainment Blog Talk Radio, and I want to close with this. We've gone 15 minutes into overtime, and I want to close with this thought when it comes down to the National Football League in America. We as a society have changed our values from our family to entertainment. Social networking, social media, and social means of divergence have taken away the intellectual, the educational, and spiritual side of American society. If we don't get this back now, we may lose it forever.